You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
This episode brought to you by Pet Flow, the leader in pet food and supplies.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
One moment, your pet seems absolutely normal, and then it happens. It might just be a chatter of its jaw, or may fall to the ground and paddle with its feet, totally unaware of what's going on around it. Is your pet in pain? Is it going to die? You feel helpless and don't know what to do. My guest will give us some insights into seizures. She is veterinarian Dr. Karen Mugnana. She is a board-certified veterinary internist with a subspecialty in neurology and is a professor of neurology at North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine. We'll be right back after the short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
It's the Daily Doorbusters from Pet Flow, the leader in pet food and supplies. Opportunity knocks every day with hundreds of products offered at huge, huge discounts. Up to 80% for your furry best friends. And delivered right to your door. Go to PetFlow.com/PetDoc. These deals last for one day only, so act fast. 150 brands to choose from. Pet food, treats, toys, and more items than you can shake a tail at. And get free shipping on orders of $39 or more. A new deal every day. Get your paws on today's Pet Flow Daily Doorbusters deal. Go to PetFlow.com/PetDoc now.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's O-Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. O-Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, this is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Mugnana, thank you very much. This is such an important subject because I have so many clients who will be bringing in, usually a dog it seems, and sometimes a cat, who's had a seizure and they are just petrified. So number one, thank you for being with us today.
No, it's my pleasure to be here.
So how common are seizures?
Seizures and epilepsy is actually the single most common neurologic disorder that we see in dogs. It's been estimated to occur in up to 5% of the dog population. Now, that number varies a bit depending on whether we're looking at the general population or the population of dogs that have presented to a referral hospital for advanced care. But regardless, you know, if you can't plug out the numbers, the estimates to up to 780,000 dogs that may be diagnosed with epilepsy every year.
Now, sometimes you call it epilepsy, sometimes seizures, convulsions. Is there truly a difference between those different terminologies?
There is a difference, and it's really important to understand the difference. So what a seizure is a seizure itself results from abnormal electrical activity in the brain, where the cells of the brain tend to fire spontaneously in an abnormal manner. And this activity manifests with the physical characteristics that we see in the seizure that you spoke of, the jaw chattering or the limb paddling, the actual convulsion that we see. The term epilepsy refers to recurrent or repeated seizures of whatever cause. So a single seizure, we just term a seizure. If an animal tends to have repeated seizures, then that animal is classified as having the disorder of epilepsy.
And I know people will also have epilepsy. So I've always felt comfortable telling people this is not painful because I know that's one of their biggest concerns. They see their pet going through these contortions. And it's like, oh my goodness, I feel so helpless. You know, I want to grab their tongue so they don't swallow their tongue. You know, I want to hold them and love them. So, Dr. Mignogna, is this pain?
No, we do not believe that a seizure is painful. And again, we base a lot of this on what humans say that have seizures. And a lot of the seizures, like you mentioned, that we see in humans are very similar to the seizures that we see in dogs. And most people don't actually remember a lot about the seizure, and it's not painful as well. So we do not believe that seizures are painful in animals. Some dogs will have what we call a aura or a preictal sign where they may know that a seizure is coming on, and they may hide or seek out the owner. But during the seizure themselves, they're probably not aware of what is going on. And most animals, when they have generalized seizures, will lose consciousness.
You had mentioned, and thank you for saying that, because that's what I've always been telling my clients. And maybe it's because we both went to the same university for training, UC Davis. So it's like, yes, no wonder I am so smart, is because that's where I was trained also. But with epilepsy and seizures, I'll simplistically tell my clients that the problem is either due to inside of the brain or outside of the brain, and kind of go through an algorithm, you know, this list of various things that can cause it. You being the specialist, what do you tell your clients as to the causes of epilepsy?
Well, that's actually the way that I approach epilepsy as well, and I think that's an excellent way to think about it. We think about things outside the brain, and I usually try to think about those first. And the things outside the brain that we're thinking of are things where either the animal will ingest a toxin that has effects on the brain, or there may be some abnormal function of one of the organs in the body that results in the buildup of some sort of byproduct that can also influence the brain. So we try to screen first for those sorts of things that can cause seizures. If we don't find something outside the brain, then we have to start thinking of things inside the brain. And the things that we think of inside the brain are structural causes where there is actually some sort of change in the structure of the brain, and that could be due to a brain tumor, that could be due to a stroke, that could be due to an infection of the brain, are probably the three most common we see. And then the last category is perhaps the most common thing that we see in dogs. And it's a disease that we call idiopathic epilepsy. And what idiopathic epilepsy is it's a disease that is believed to be inherited in many breeds of dogs, but it's an absence of any underlying cause. So when you look at the brain structurally, it's normal, but obviously on a molecular basis, or when we get down to the way the cellular mechanisms are working in the brain, there's something that's gone awry that's causing the seizures.
And that is one of my most favorite words in veterinary medicine, idiopathic, because I'll tell my clients, it sounds like idiot, doesn't it? Because I can run every test under the sun, send you to people with more initials after their name than mine, super, super smart people, and will go, you know, I have no idea what's causing this. You had
That's
mentioned...
Exactly true.
I know. And here you are, super smart, and it must make you feel very helpless at times, going, I can't give you a reason. You had mentioned that there seems to be a genetic basis. What breeds might be more likely to have epilepsy?
Yeah, there is a genetic basis that actually has been proven in some breeds, and then it's suspected in other breeds. But most dogs, when we talk about idiopathic epilepsy with an onset of seizures, usually between 1 and 5 years of age, we're talking about the inherited form of the disease. And some of the breeds that we see it in includes Australian Shepherds, Border Collies, Beagles, Bernese Mountain Dogs, English Springer Spaniels, Labrador Retrievers, Golden Retrievers, German Shepherds, Irish Wolfhounds, Shetland Sheepdogs, Poodles, Vislas, to name the ones.
That's a lot.
Yeah, so there's quite a few, and then I'm sure there's many more that haven't quite made the list yet, where, again, an inherited basis is suspected but hasn't been confirmed.
If, somewhat as an aside, somebody says, oh, I have this gorgeous Australian Shepherd, and I want to breed her, him, because just a magnificent animal. How would you counsel them?
I counsel people is that if you have a dog that has seizures and an underlying cause has not been found, so we presume idiopathic epilepsy, or if there's any seizures in the line, I think the responsible thing to do is to not use that animal as a breeding animal, because we just, you know, we don't know about the genetics of the disease based on genetic studies that have been done, and actually that's an area of intense research right now. It seems that the genetics are quite complicated, so it's not a simple pattern of inheritance. But regardless, we know that it can be carried on in lineages, and probably the best way to try to decrease the incidence of the disease is to remove any animal that has seizures from the breeding population. And we're hopeful that hopefully in the years to come, and maybe not too many years, with all this genetic research that's being done, perhaps we'll be able to identify the genes and there'll be a screening way to determine whether or not an animal is a carrier. But unfortunately, at this point, we're not there yet.
And that is so heartbreaking for clients when they see a pet having a seizure. Of course, you know, they don't want to spread it and continue on that line, so that's great information. But they also want the seizures to stop in their pet. And so many times I'll have to counsel the clients that, okay, here it had a seizure. Especially if it's the first one, they come flying through the door. Oh my goodness, you know, this is what's happening at home. And of course, the dog is sitting there with its tail wagging going, hi, I feel just fine. And it can be so frustrating. Okay, I never want to see this again. And how can we prevent it? And going, sometimes we can't, especially if it's idiopathic. What are some of the treatment modalities, and when do you start a pet on anti-seizure medication?
Right. And I agree that, you know, for an owner, especially an owner that's watching the seizure for the first time, it can be very, very frightening and very, very devastating. And in fact, seeing your animal continue to seizure oftentimes doesn't get any easier. You know, during the seizure itself, you talked a little bit about that in the past, the best thing to do is just to keep the animal calm in an area where, or you keep calm, I should say, and keep the animal in an area where it can't injure itself. So if the dog's at the top of a flight of stairs, I will say to move it. If it's under a low-lying table, I'll say maybe to move it. But the best thing to do otherwise is just to leave the animal alone. Don't get by the animal's mouth. There's nothing that we know of that you need to do in there. The dogs don't swallow their tongue, and just time the seizure. We want to, most seizures will end within a minute or a couple minutes. If a seizure lasts more than 5 minutes, then you need to seek emergency care. But most seizures will end on their own, and dogs will be fine afterwards. And the best thing you can do, again, is stay away from the animal, but observe it closely so that it won't hurt itself. Sometimes after the seizure, you will notice some abnormal behavior. The animal may be confused. It may bump into things, and that is normal. It can last for minutes to hours, but will resolve over time. So that's not anything that you need to worry about too much. And again, observation is the most important thing in that regard. As to what we do to try to prevent the seizures, it's mostly medication. And there's a couple.
Do you start them right away, right after they've had their first seizure?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't necessarily start them right after they've had the first seizure. So if they've just had a first seizure, I think it's good to go into your veterinarian's office and be evaluated. One seizure alone doesn't probably warrant treatment. If an animal tends to have patterns where they're seizuring more frequently than one seizure a month, or if they tend to have repeated seizures within a 24-hour period, which we call cluster seizures. So that would be three seizures or more within a 24-hour period, or more importantly, if they're having these multiple seizures without regaining normalcy and consciousness between hand, regardless of how frequent those cluster seizures are, we will recommend treatment. So those are the general guidelines that I'll use as to when I start treatment, but usually not after the first seizure, unless it was typically severe or there's some unusual circumstances around it.
One of the questions people always have, sometimes it's a matter of, I don't believe in medication for myself or for my pets, but what's going to happen if I don't treat the seizures? Are they going to die from having these seizures?
And that's a really good question. And that's a good question that I get a lot too, is what is the purpose of treating these seizures? What happens if I don't treat them? And really the honest opinion is, especially on an individual case-by-case basis, we don't know what's going to happen. But the reason we recommend treatment is because there is a theory that's been out there for some time that the more seizures that happen, perhaps the more severe those seizures will be and the more difficult they may be able to treat over the long term. So essentially we're treating the animal hopefully to get rid of the seizures or at least lessen the seizures to improve the quality of life during that time period and hopefully to prevent the seizures from becoming more severe where they could potentially become difficult to control.
Dr. Mignogna, the various medications that are available to me, the ones that I will typically use, would be something like phenobarbital and potassium bromide. And I'll always warn clients that no medication is without potential side effects. Are these still the two main medications that a neurologist such as yourself are reaching for?
Yes, I think they're still the two main medications that are used most commonly. And the reason being is that we have the most experience with them, and both of those have been shown in studies to be quite effective in dogs. So they will control at least half of the population, and, you know, in phenobarbital, some studies suggest that it will control up to 85% of the population in dogs. The problem, as you mentioned, is that the drugs aren't without their side effects, and the side effects with phenobarbital and potassium bromide both can be quite severe. So there are some newer drugs that we're looking at that have been approved for use in humans, and they're slowly making their way into veterinary practice, and veterinary neurologists oftentimes will standardly use these drugs, and some general practitioners are now as well. The caveat I always like to tell owners about is that we don't have as much experience with these drugs, so we don't know how effective they are, and we really don't know how safe they are. Based on what information is out there, they may have a better safety profile than phenobarbital and potassium bromide, but how effective are they? That's a big question that we don't have the answer to.
And one of the ways that I know that Dr. Karen Mignogna from North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine is investigating right now are clinical trials of these various new medications. So I'm going to have you stand by. We're going to be talking more to Dr. Karen Mignogna about seizures in dogs, but we're going to have a short little break right now talking about something that I think is really quite important, our pets and their needs and time. So how much is your pet worth to you? You'd probably say priceless. And how much is your time worth to you? Immeasurable. And taking time away from those moments when you could be enjoying your pet's company are sometimes unavoidable, like when you need to buy, oh yes, pet supplies. But now there's a great way to find all the items you need and others that are just plain fun. PetFlow.com is the leader in pet food delivery services. They offer food and pet supplies from over 150 leading pet brands that are shipped directly to your door. No hefting, no lifting, no going to the store. So go to PetFlow.com/PetDoc and use code PETDOC to get free shipping on all orders above $39, site-wide, no exclusions. And sometimes you just run out of food and supplies because you ran out of time to pick them up or you simply forgot. Not a problem with their easy recurring shipping option. Place an order at any time from home, your smartphone, when you're on the go. Just set it, forget it. And are you one of those persons that lives for a bargain? Daily doorbusters are just what the doctor ordered. Daily deals on hundreds of products up to 80% off. But deals last only for a day, so act fast. So what to do? Go to PetFlow.com/PetDoc. Use code PETDOC to get free shipping on orders above $39. Again, site-wide, no exclusions. Give it a try. It's fun, easy, and saves you time and money. All right, now back to the Pet Doctor programming and Dr. Karen Mignogna. So Dr. Mignogna, I know you're involved at North Carolina with a clinical studies trial. Tell us a little bit about that.
The trial that's currently underway here is designed to evaluate a new medication specifically for idiopathic epilepsy in dogs. And the same as is the case with humans, new drugs for animals must be tested for safety and effectiveness. And this specific trial is regulated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the FDA. Again, to evaluate a drug that's specifically being looked at has a treatment for idiopathic epilepsy in dogs.
Now, how do people become part of this study?
There are specific eligibility requirements for the study, and those include, again, we're looking at dogs with idiopathic epilepsy. So dogs have to be at least 4 months of age. They have to weigh at least 3.5 pounds.
Teeny babies.
Yeah, so they can be quite small. And again, there's no upper limit in terms of their weight. They have to have no previous history of these cluster seizures. So repeated seizures within a 24-hour period. They can't have had more than 3 seizures within a 24-hour period. They can't be pregnant, suspected of being pregnant or lactating. And this is a study where we're looking at animals that are not being treated with other medications, so they cannot have received any more than 7 days of prior treatment with an anti-seizure medication. So this is not a trial for a dog that's already on phenobarbital and they're looking at something else. This is for a dog that currently is not being treated for the seizures.
So this is catching them really early.
Yeah, catching them earlier, catching perhaps a dog that's had seizures for some time, but the seizures haven't been frequent enough to warrant treatment. And now maybe things have changed, so the owner is interested in pursuing treatment.
Now, for these clients with their pets with seizures, is it just dogs?
This study is just dogs, yes.
And do they have to live near North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine in order to participate?
They actually do not.
Fabulous.
And if there is a dog owner that's interested in learning more, they may contact their regular veterinarian who may have some information on it. Or else there's also information online, or they can get additional information with a toll-free phone number. And I can give you that information. The website is actually quite easy to remember. It's www.helpfordogswithseizures.com. And the phone number is 888-598-7125, extension 208.
So people can get that from the show, and then we can also have it on our website, too, so people can easily access this.
And the person that they speak to or on the website, they can find the person. If they call the number, the person they speak to can find the site closest to them. Currently, there are sites available in multiple states, including, besides North Carolina, California, Colorado, Florida, Illinois, Kansas, Massachusetts, Maine, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Virginia.
Excellent. Now, how time-consuming is this going to be? Because sometimes you go, I love my pet, but I have a job, I have family, I have commitments. I just don't have the time to do something like this. Is it going to be very time-intensive?
It is not actually that time-intensive. So initially, there's a screening visit to see if the dog qualifies for the study. And that's, again, should just be a relatively short visit where the dog's examined and some laboratory parameters are assessed. If the dog does qualify for the study, then it may require subsequent visits. And typically, the visits are about on a once-monthly basis. And there may be up to 4 scheduled visits during the study. And the study can last a maximum of approximately 5 months. However, the duration actually may be shorter than that if the dog's seizures are not controlled. So it is, I would say in general, they're looking at a visit to the study site at about a monthly basis for a period of up to 5 months.
You had mentioned, Dr. Mignogna, that there are going to be lab tests that need to be given, and you're looking at new medications. And I can also imagine clients going, all right, how much is this going to cost me? Because a new medication, this could be expensive, and I love my pet, but...
Right. And fortunately for this study, all the costs associated with the study are being paid by the sponsor. So qualifying dogs can receive diagnostic testing, including an MRI of their dog's brain, a spinal tap, and blood work, and all that is free, as is the potential medication that the animal will be put on. And in addition, the sponsor is providing up to $150 in gift cards by participating in the study to help cover the travel costs.
This sounds like the absolute win-win for everybody involved. That's great.
Yeah, it is great. And, you know, it provides great information on epilepsy and treatment, and also provides the owners with some incentives and help because they are busy and making the time in their busy schedule to participate into the study.
One of the things that I love about veterinary medicine and the research that we're doing in animals, and this is definitely research, oftentimes people hear the word research and they get this horrible vision of dogs, cats, bunnies with electrodes sticking out of their heads and doing science, you know, a mad scientist out there. And this is definitely the family pet trying to help them. And also I'm wondering, what's the translation of what you're learning here into human medicine?
Right, and I think that is very important. And I think more and more in veterinary medicine, you know, there is a lot of research that's being done in the laboratory setting. But to really understand how it's going to affect a family pet with a specific disease, you really need to evaluate it in a family pet with a specific disease. So I think that's why those clinical trials are so important, because it can provide care for the owners and their pet, and also provide the information that we need to advance veterinary medicine and really understand what the best care is for dogs. And as you mentioned, a lot of this information has translational importance too, in that what we learn in humans is oftentimes important in how we treat dogs, and what we learn from these trials in dogs has the potential benefit of helping people as well, because I think as we learn more about specifically epilepsy in dogs, we find that epilepsy in dogs has some characteristics that are quite similar to epilepsy in people as well. And I presume that's probably the same for many of the diseases that we deal with.
And you'd mentioned giving help. And oftentimes my clients are feeling so helpless when they're watching their pet go through a seizure. Some of them are rather mild. Some of them can just be heartbreaking to watch. And even though we can say, you know, it's not painful, oh, it's painful to watch. Are there support groups for these people?
There actually are support groups for these people, and I think the support groups are a wonderful resource for owners to use, especially pet owners who are witnessing seizures and going through seizures for the first time. And really, I found that the strongest advocates for epilepsy education and outreach, as well as sources of financial support for the research that we're doing, and support, as well as support for the pet owners, comes from other people whose pets' lives have been touched with epilepsy and they've dealt with the challenges of dealing with the disease. And there are actually, you know, several groups that work with that. There's a couple that I've had quite a bit of contact with, and one is called Toby's Foundation, and they have a website, which is www.tobysfoundation.org, and they are focused on looking at, again, support for owners, but also research to really understand the disease and move it forward. Now, another group which provides a lot of education and support for owners is called the Epple Canine Foundation. And they have a website as well, www.canine-epilepsy.com. And again, do quite a wonderful job of educating pet owners and the general public on canine epilepsy, as well as providing support to do research and education and move, you know, our understanding of the disease forward.
Dr. Mignogna, throughout this conversation, we've been talking about dogs. And dogs, yes, are wonderful, but how about cats? So many of us have cats, and they have seizures. But honestly, in my hands, it seems to be I see seizure in cats much less frequently than dogs. Is it my just personal perspective, or is that a truism?
That is a truism, and I don't want to forget about cats, because cats are important and cats can have quite serious seizures, but the incidence of seizures in cats is much less than in dogs. So by all means, we do see them, but we don't see them as often. And I think because of that, a lot of the focus on the research has been in dogs, just because it's so much more of a common problem in the dog population than it is in the cats. But by all means, cats are something that we are concerned with as well, and can oftentimes go through similar treatments and such. We just see much less of them even as a neurologist. I see many fewer cats than dogs.
And if you could touch quickly on the older cat, older dog who has never had a seizure in its life and now starts to have seizures that might be fairly strong in their intensity. In my history, it seems like most of the time, sad to say, this is due to a brain tumor. So people try to, oh, it's not a big deal, we'll just ignore it, we'll just watch it. What's your opinion on this?
That is my opinion as well, and I think it's important to remember we talk about so many dogs having idiopathic epilepsy, but that's really a disease that's most commonly diagnosed between 1 and 5 or 7 years of age. So if you have a 10-year-old dog or a 12-year-old dog that has new onset seizures that are severe, we're always concerned that there is an underlying cause and that, you know, could be a tumor, that could be a stroke, that could be due to dysfunction of the organs because of cancer somewhere else. But those are the animals that I feel more strongly about do warrant some further diagnostics if the owners wish to pursue them, because it's very important in those cases to determine whether or not the animal does have some underlying cause. And there are cases where we do a full workup, and again, we're left in that situation where we don't find an underlying cause. But those are, again, the ones that are more important to really exclude the possibility that there may be a brain tumor or something else of that nature has the cause of the seizures.
We've been chatting today with Dr. Karen Mugnana. She is a board-certified veterinary internist with a subspecialty in neurology and professor of neurology at North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine. Dr. Mugnana, thank you very much. This has, I think, opened a lot of people's eyes to what seizures are, their causes, their treatments. Your research is wondrous in clinical trials. I hope people do take advantage of it, especially the cost is fabulous.
Well, it's been my pleasure speaking with you today.
So if you have questions about what's going on with your pet, the best thing to do is don't go to Dr. Google. Go to your own veterinarian. They can give you much greater insights. And if there's questions about seizures, Dr. Mugnana and her clinical trials will hopefully help shed some light on it. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Thank you very much for listening. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner you can be. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.